From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Two bombshell news reports over the weekend have President Donald Trump on the defense once more regarding the special counsel's investigation. The New York Times on Friday revealed that the FBI had begun investigating Trump himself in early 2017 when he fired then-FBI Director James Comey just weeks into his presidential tenure. According to the Times, law enforcement officials became so concerned by the president's behavior that they began investigating whether he had been working on behalf of Russia against American interests. And then on Sunday, the Washington Post reported that President Trump has gone to extraordinary lengths to conceal details of his conversations with Russian President Vladimir Putin, including on at least one occasion taking possession of the notes of his own interpreter and instructing the linguist not to discuss what had transpired with other administration officials. We turn to Ron Fine, legal director of Free Speech for People and also a constitutional lawyer. He had previously served as an assistant regional counsel in the U.S. EPA. He's the co-author with John Bonifaz and Ben Clements of the new book, The Constitution Demands It, The Case for the Impeachment of Donald Trump. And he's been on our program to talk about that. Welcome back, Ron.
It's good to see you again.
So first, let's talk about the New York Times report. This report that I don't know if we've ever had such a thing happen that we've known of, that the FBI would open an investigation into a sitting president. And this happened apparently right after Trump fired James Comey. How significant is this?
It's almost beyond conception, because we've had in the past examples of either city officials or state officials, and occasionally presidents, of being corrupt in the ordinary sense. But we've never had a case before of a sitting United States president being credibly suspected of being a foreign asset.
So you have a situation, I'm assuming, where James Comey's colleagues, the people working right under him, saw what happened, where they had their boss being first pressured by Trump over the Russia investigation and then straight off fired, seeing that a president who's supposed to remain who's supposed to allow the FBI to have independence, doing something that looked an awful lot like obstruction of justice. And it sounded like they worried that Trump was in Putin's pocket. What do you know that the New York Times found about how far that investigation actually went? Because presumably they would have had to hide what they were doing from the president himself.
That's very difficult because, of course, the FBI is part of the Department of Justice, which ultimately does report to the Attorney General and then on to the president. But we have here a situation that we've never dealt with before as a country, and that's that the president, who we know increasingly for years before he ran for office, had been funding his lavish lifestyle by essentially laundering money for the Russian mafia and foreign oligarchs from various countries, swept into office on a presidential campaign where his senior most campaign officials were working directly with Russian intelligence. This is, as you say it, it sounds almost fantastical, and yet it's exactly what happened. And then in office, his behavior has been so bizarre, so not just supportive of good diplomatic relations with Russia, but so clearly acting in Russia's interests and taking steps to avoid the United States government from understanding what exactly his interactions with Vladimir Putin and other Russians are, that it really does raise the specter that his actions are not just ordinary criminal obstruction of justice, but that he's actually deeply compromised and is under leverage or some sort of control from Russian intelligence.
Well, the special counsel, Robert Mueller, took over that investigation as per the Times report. But the Times said it's unclear whether Mr. Mueller is still pursuing the counterintelligence matter, that is, whether the president is acting against the country's interests. How much of this aspect of it, do you think, is going to play into the Mueller investigation? We are told that the Mueller investigation is essentially wrapping up. It's getting close to its final report. And it looks as though Mueller might have focused more on the issue of obstruction of justice. And I'm wondering, is there a way to even know whether Putin has something on Trump or not?
I don't want to set the bar too high here and then have people, you know, expecting that what we're going to find is all going to be incredible bombshells, because the basic picture has been out in the public eye for a long time, which is that Trump has taken steps to obstruct investigations into himself and his cronies and his subordinates. He's interfered with FBI investigations. And whether Special Counsel Mueller decides that crosses the line into criminal obstruction of justice, it's certainly obstructing the administration of justice in a way very parallel to what Richard Nixon did in the 1970s. And again, whatever Mueller concludes on the counterintelligence side as to whether Trump was acting under the direction or control of the Kremlin, it's certainly true that he has been very open, and his campaign was very open, and in office he's been very open to some really extraordinary ways of interacting with the Russian government that go beyond the pale of what we would expect from the President of the United States. And those are impeachable offenses, regardless of what special counsel determines they cross the line into federal criminal violations, or whether he determines that Trump is actually a foreign asset.
Let's go to the Washington Post report, which coming on the heels of the New York Times article is quite remarkable as well. The title is, Trump has concealed details of his face-to-face encounters with Putin from senior officials in administration. So there's a way presidents are supposed to interact with other heads of state, right? That when you are having a conversation with another head of state, you're essentially conducting foreign policy, whether you know it or not, whether you like it or not. And so therefore, those interactions are carefully documented often, usually. They are tracked. The details of what the president says are shared with senior administration officials. And it sounds like Trump essentially threw out the rule book, if you will, on his interactions with Putin, as per the Washington Post, 5 meetings over this 2-year period that were face-to-face meetings that there just isn't a clear written record of. Again, how significant is this?
It's incredibly significant. And when you look at past presidents' interactions, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, when the president is meeting with a foreign leader, they're usually surrounded by various assistants who are taking notes, keeping track of what's going on. And Trump's insistence on meeting with Putin with no one present but a translator is extremely shady. It reminds me of Jared Kushner's attempt to set up a secure channel through the Russian embassy so that Jared Kushner could talk directly to the Kremlin without the U.S. intelligence services being able to potentially monitor it. And one of these conversations, the timing is extremely suspicious. He had a conversation with Putin just as the story was breaking about the campaign's meeting at Trump Tower in June of 2016 with Russian intelligence operatives. And it was immediately after that secret meeting, or the private meeting with Putin, that Trump dictated a misleading statement about the purpose of the Trump Tower meeting. And what that suggests is that Trump may have coordinated his message to the American public on what happened in that Trump Tower meeting with none other than Vladimir Putin.
And we also know recently that that his former campaign chair, Paul Manafort, shared polling data with Russian government officials, polling data of the U.S. presidential election, which, I don't know, may or may not have helped or given raw material for those people involved in essentially spewing propaganda to the American electorate through social media. You know, it's not clear whether those two are linked yet, but it seems as though it seems awfully suspicious. If indeed if Trump was having these undocumented these meetings with Putin that were not properly documented, what does that mean for national security? Is it something that can form the basis of a new Democrat-controlled House to say, this is just not supposed to happen this way, and this is yet another of the list of impeachable offenses?
Absolutely. So what we know so far is enough of the basis for the House of Representatives to begin a process of determining whether to impeach and remove Trump. And what's important to note is that impeachment is not a form of punishment, it's to protect the country. And if the House determines that President Trump is acting in a manner that is, in the most charitable interpretation, extremely erratic and questionable, and in the more likely interpretations, indicating that he's compromised in some way, then it absolutely can take steps towards determining that this is an impeachable offense and removing him on this ground, that the framers of the Constitution were specifically worried about the phenomenon of foreign powers helping to bring somebody under their guidance or influence or direction into the presidency, and listed that as a reason for impeachment. And it looks like Trump will be potentially the first example of a president who's actually vindicated that fear. But the framers of the Constitution knew that this was a possibility, and it looks like it's on us.
Ron, Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen, is due to testify to Congress today. He's been charged, prosecuted, tried, convicted, sentenced, and he has essentially turned on his previous boss and is eager, it seems, to talk to members of the Democratic members of the House who've asked for his testimony. Trump can't seem to stop talking about it. On an interview on Fox News over the weekend, he talked at length about it, saying that they should look at Michael Cohen's father-in-law because that's the one that people want to, because that's where the money is in the family. He's trying to get his sentence reduced. That's why he's wanting to talk about the president. And then he was very sharply rebuked in writing by three top Democrats, Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler and Elijah Cummings, all of whom oversee important House committees. Is this, as far as you can tell, the Democrats creating a paper trail for Trump? They warned him against obstructing justice and speaking out about Cohen.
I don't think he needs any further warnings. I mean, there's laws against intimidating witnesses for good reason. And what Trump is doing by suggesting investigations into Michael Cohen's father-in-law is very clearly sending a message of intimidation to Michael Cohen to discourage him from testifying. And the truth is that Trump knows that Michael Cohen knows where a lot of the metaphorical and possibly literal bodies are buried because he was with the Trump Organization for a decade. And so he knows about the Trump Organization's shady dealings with foreign oligarchs, its possible illegal activities both here and abroad. He knows, of course, about the campaign's illegal payments of hush money to Trump's former mistresses to buy their silence during the election. And he knows a lot, maybe not everything, but he knows a lot about the Trump relationship with Russians and attempts to do business with Russia even as the 2016 election campaign was underway.
So part of the letter that the lawmakers wrote said, our nation's laws prohibit efforts to discourage, intimidate, or otherwise pressure a witness not to provide testimony to Congress. In putting this in writing to a sitting president, again, highly unusual, very strong words. Some have argued that the Democrats, with their newfound political power in the House, would be better spent on focusing on new legislation. Others have said impeachment above all else. And then yet more have suggested one can actually do both at the same time. What do you think the Democrats' focus should be?
Well, I think Congress, and I would include both the Democrats and the Republicans, can do more than one thing at a time. I think with our divided government, there is not going to be a ton of major new legislation. Obviously, the Democrats control the House, the Republicans, the Senate, and with the president having the veto power, it's very difficult to pass any major new legislation. But the House of Representatives should absolutely begin an impeachment inquiry and of course, see where the facts lead them. But there is enough evidence on the record already to justify starting those investigations.
So you're a constitutional lawyer. So I want to ask you about the fact that all of this is happening at the time when we have a historic partial government, federal government shutdown. It has broken records for how long it has gone on now, going into its fourth week. And Republicans have urged, as well as Fox News and conservative commentators, have urged Trump to use federal emergency powers to simply fund the wall himself. There's some talk some of that money might come out of money that was allocated by Congress for disaster areas, areas like Puerto Rico and other hurricane-affected areas. But some have said that this would be a constitutional crisis if Trump were to get the funding for his wall in this way, that it would put us in the midst of a constitutional crisis. What do you think?
So there's a lot of layers to this. So, you know, the wall itself as a policy idea is something that people can disagree on. And if Trump actually had support for building a wall from Congress and Congress actually funded it, we'd be having an entirely separate conversation. But what Trump is considering doing is declaring a national emergency using emergency authorities. And there are some broad emergency authorities that are in the federal law books for the president, but declaring an emergency that's entirely bogus because there's no actual crisis that would justify a national emergency, and using that to work around the fact that Congress is refusing to fund the wall. So doing it this way, if that's what Trump does, declaring a bogus emergency to bypass the fact that all appropriations must be originated from Congress, and the Constitution actually prohibits drawing money from the Treasury except as authorized by Congress. Trump doing it this way would be an abuse of power, using the emergency powers that do give the president some discretion in deciding what's an emergency, but this is clearly not one. It would be an attempt to end run around the Constitution's separation of powers and yet another ground for impeachment hearings.
I know that you've said before that there's plenty of basis for impeachment with or without the results of Robert Mueller's investigation, but that investigation is wrapping up, coming to a close. There's been a lot of speculation about what that report will conclude. Is it possible that the report's results will give more of a backing to those who want this president impeached, or should they move ahead without it?
I think they should move ahead without it. And part of the reason for that is that not all impeachable offenses are crimes. And many of them, like Trump's violation of the Foreign Emoluments Clause, taking money from foreign dictators for his businesses, is not part of Mueller's investigation. But another fact is that we really don't know how long it's going to take for Mueller to complete his investigation. There's certainly some speculation that it will be coming soon, but we really don't know that for a fact. And in the Nixon impeachment hearings, they started the impeachment inquiry months before they got anything from the special prosecutor. But these processes take a little bit of time. The Judiciary Committee would need to hire its staff and begin the process, and they can take the special counsel's material into consideration when it's available. But in the meantime, to wait what could be an indefinite amount of time until Mueller finishes his process puts the nation at an unacceptable risk.
So what do you expect is going to come out of what's happening this week, which is the Michael Cohen testimony? And do you expect that Congress will ask for more testimonies from more people that have been involved in the investigation to speak out? Because we may hear a lot of presidential dirty laundry being aired this week, if you will. Of course, all of it has to fall within the purview of what's okay to say regarding the investigation.
Michael Cohen is going to be an interesting witness. He has a lot to tell, but it's not clear how much he's going to be willing to tell. Apparently, the special counsel did not object to him testifying, but there are some areas where Michael Cohen has not given full cooperation to the United States government. So he may decline to talk about certain areas, but he knows a lot about the Trump Organization's business practices, about the Trump campaign's practices in 2016, both with respect to the hush money payments and Russian interactions, and of course to some things that happened after Trump came into office. So what Michael Cohen is willing to tell is probably only going to be a part of what he could tell, but I think that his testimony is likely to confirm some of what we already know and had heard, but I think it'll also expose some new details that haven't been made public yet. It's hard to speculate on exactly what, but I think it's going to be a pretty exciting day of testimony.
What about the court of public opinion? What do you think this is? Giving a public testimony, you're going to have the American public learn more, perhaps, than they might even want to know about Trump's dealings. And it seems as though the president is already at a historically low approval ratings. It may fall even further. There's this fear that Trump is unimpeachable because he's got such a strong base of support, and he keeps hammering that fact too, as if there's nothing he could do that would reduce his support among some factions of the American public. But no one is invincible or invulnerable. I'm wondering if you think this hearing and all of the things that are coming out, the Times report, the Post report, are just eroding away at the little bit of support he has left.
And Trump certainly has a floor of support. It's worth noting that Richard Nixon also had some deep base of support that never abandoned him. On the day that Richard Nixon resigned, a poll showed that 25% of the American public supported him. That 25% support is not enough to keep a president in office in the face of an impeachment process. So Trump's support is wearing out, and the Republicans in Congress are definitely losing patience with him. The public support for impeachment is a little bit less than half, and that's much higher than it was at a comparable stage in the Nixon impeachment process. And we're working, of course, to get it over 50%, but the continuing revelations, a continued confirmation of things that we've already long suspected, and of course Trump's new offenses continue to tear away at that support. And if the House gets serious about an impeachment inquiry and starts holding serious hearings, open public hearings that put the evidence out there, as Congress refused to do for the last 2 years, by and large, then I think the American public will very quickly cross that threshold and be ready to move on impeachment.
And your book, which details all of these, through chapters, all of the various impeachment, the bases for impeachment, is it already out of date? There's so much that seems to come out. I feel like it's so, even for a journalist to keep track of, forget about week by week, day by day developments, that you could probably write a part two by now.
Yeah, we've had to supplement it. We had 8 grounds for impeachment hearings in the book, and then we had a chapter where we listed some emerging issues that could materialize into impeachable offenses. And since then, we've confirmed 2 of them. So we now have 10 grounds for impeachment hearings. But the truth is that Trump does commit new impeachable offenses with astonishing speed, and it does make it hard to keep up sometimes. But really, they all boil down to a few common themes, which is that he's corrupt, authoritarian, and very possibly a foreign government asset.
And finally, we talked about public support. He still retains some level of support among his Republican Party. It's still going pretty high up. I mean, think about the Lindsey Graham interview over the weekend. High-ranking Senator Lindsey Graham continuing to defend the president at every turn on interviews in the public, constantly blaming the Democrats for everything that Trump blames the Democrats for. And, the flawed as he is, to put it mildly, he still seems to be seen as the Republicans' best defense against or for holding political power. I mean, but at what cost to the country, right?
I think some historical perspective will help show the thinness of Trump's support, which is that in the case of Richard Nixon, just as the House Judiciary Committee was starting its impeachment hearings, there was a syndicated report in newspapers around the country that quoted from an editorial from a newspaper that said there isn't a ghost of a chance that the Senate will vote to convict Richard Nixon. 3 months after that, he was gone. And I think the same is likely to happen with Trump, that his support, there's that 25% that will never abandon him no matter what. He could shoot someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue. And that wasn't enough to save Nixon, and it won't be enough to save Trump. And his supporters in Congress, both in the House and the Senate, I think that support is very thin, and it is as well among the parts of the American public that are supporting him at this moment. So I think it's a mistake to look at his current base of support and say that that will be there for him forever. As more and more comes out and as Congress gets serious about these investigations, Trump's support is going to wear away fast.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Ron, for joining us today. Give out a website so that people can find out more information about the work you do.
Thank you so much. We have two. One is freespeechforpeople.org, and the other is impeachmentproject.org.
And we link to both of those from our website. Thanks again, Ron.
Thank you so much.
Ron Fine is legal director of Free Speech for People and the co-author with John Bonifaz and Ben Clements of the book The Constitution Demands It, the case for the impeachment of Donald Trump. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.